Father's Day was near when I brought my three-year-old son, this is another father telling a story, Tyler, to the card store. Inside, I showed him the cards for dads and told him to pick one. When I looked back, Tyler was picking up one card after another, opening them up and quickly shoving them back into the slots every which way. Tyler, what are you doing? I asked. Haven't you found a nice card for daddy yet? No, he replied. I'm looking one for the money in it. I tell you, what a powerful Father's Day weekend we have had thus far. With the simulcast that we watched on Friday, very, very powerful time of the teacher sharing. What a message the pastor gave at the end. If you missed that, if you weren't here, men, you have to see that. I mean, ultimately, that is going to be on the web. Gary Blanchett is a guy that has that kind of information, and so connect with him. We'll try to have that in the bulletin next week. But just a great opportunity for us to be instructed as men and as fathers. And then to watch Courageous last night. I mean, what a funny, sad, inspiring movie that is. For me, and hopefully for you too, it really reinforces the value of fatherhood and the importance of us being the men that God has called us to be. Because He is calling, you know. I mean, God is calling each of us as believers, generally, naturally, but because as Father's Day, focusing on the men, and the men He's calling us to be, the husbands He's calling to be us to be, the fathers that He's calling us to be. But the comfort of knowing that God is calling us is to know wherever God calls us to, He's going to lead us through. He's never going to call us to do something that He's not going to give us a capacity to accomplish. And so therefore, to think of being a father, think about being a husband, think about being a man. And ultimately, I'm not sure what that conjures up for you, but just automatically, when I think about the man I'm supposed to be, the husband I'm supposed to be, the father I'm supposed to be, it just conjures up desire, emotion, passion, just a desire to be better for the sake of my wife and my family, and even for the community in terms of just my manhood. And to understand God is going to provide for that. I mean, so therefore, every moment provides an opportunity to live in the provisions that He has made for us to be a godly man, a loving husband, and a good father. Now, for the past several years, we've been going through the book of Joshua on Father's Day, but this morning, what I'd like to do is I'd like to stay in Exodus because there are some very powerful principles for us in chapter 14, as ultimately we see Moses being a leader. Now, as you turn there, remember, the Israelites have been led to the shore of the Red Sea because Pharaoh changed his mind about letting them go. He and his army are pressing in against them. The people are afraid and complaining to Moses. So God asked Moses to lead. Now let's read verses 13 through 18 in Exodus chapter 14. It says here, Moses answered the people as they're basically complaining and, you know, God, what are you doing here? Do not be afraid, he says, stand firm and you will see the deliverance the Lord will bring you today. The Egyptians you see today, you will never see again. The Lord will fight for you. You need only to be still. Then the Lord said to Moses, why are you crying out to me? Tell the Israelites to move on. Raise your staff and stretch out your hand over the sea to divide the water so that the Israelites can go through the sea on dry ground. I will harden the hearts of the Egyptians so they will go in after them, and I will gain glory through Pharaoh and all his armies, through his chariots and his horsemen. The Egyptians will know that I am the Lord when I gain glory through Pharaoh, his chariots, and his horsemen. Now, you know, before we talk about the principles of leadership found in these verses and the rest, I would first like us to consider what kind of leader God calls us to be. Basically, looking at a general paradigm of leadership before we talk about the individual principles that are found here. And I like the three types of leaders given by Dennis Rainey in his book, Preparing for Marriage. And because I'm going through that series with a couple that's going to be married, I've been reminded of them. And so basically what we find, and I'm going to have to sneeze in a little bit, so be prepared for that. I'm fighting allergies. But anyways, now back to it. Yeah, preparing for marriage. Two of those principles of leadership or paradigms for leadership are bad or negative, and one is good. And the first is a lording leader. This is the approach to leadership that says it's my way or the highway. Authority and power are used to promote your thoughts, agenda, and desires to the detriment of everyone else's. Strength, money, intellect, and anger are all used as a means of control. Let me say that again. Strength, money, intellect, and anger are all used as a means of control. In fact, for the learning leader, control is seen as being the objective, the thing they're trying to accomplish. And ultimately, that is their biggest mistake. Because what we can know about leadership is that leadership is not about controlling people that are under us. And you know how we know that? The way we know that the goal of leadership is not to control people under us is because we know that God is not a bad leader. Right? But ultimately, how many people does God not control? I mean, God gives guidance, God gives direction, God gives opportunity. I think God ultimately gives boundaries. Like, there's only so far free will go. Like, I imagine that God has an ultimate plan for people, up to the ultimate plan for nations, the world, whatever. I mean, He's bringing things to an ultimate end. But ultimately, within those boundaries, He will let men act and do their stupidity and defy Him. And He's not looking to control people. He's looking to influence people. He's looking to direct people. And so therefore, control is not the paramount thing. The second type of leader is a passive non-leader. This leader may or may not like the position that he is in. Let me say that again. This person may or may not like the position they're in. And I don't know what's worse. The passive non-leader that likes the position, that ultimately they're trying to protect themselves in a place that someone has put them that they really don't deserve, or the person that doesn't want to be there at all. Whereas the lording leader wants to make every decision, the passive non-leader wants to avoid making any. They shirk responsibility, create gaps for other people to fill, and oftentimes take credit for what other people have done. I mean, that's really what the passive non-leader does when they're in a position that they don't, that they want, they like the position but don't want the leadership. That's what they do. They ultimately stand behind and let other people do things and find ways to take credit for that, or even worse, subvert and criticize those who are trying to fill gaps that they've created. In fact, I think the main thing the passive non-leader is afraid of is being out there and is being exposed to criticism. So what they found a pattern that really works for them is let other people be out there, let other people make decisions, then they have the option to stand back and to criticize. Because it's far easier to criticize than to lead. I think as we consider what we pass along to our children, when we consider people that we are leading, I mean, just to recognize, even in the context of mistakes, if people are taking initiative, that they're trying to do something good, to always keep that in mind. Because again, it's always easier to sit back and criticize things rather than being out there and leading. Now, the strange thing about us men and what drives our wives, children, employees, friends crazy is that at times we can be both. At times, we can be the lording leader. In other words, we're very strong about something. We get very angry and try and use our anger to control them because we're going to determine what happens. Then other times, we sit back and they say, where are you? Why aren't you leading here? Like, this is a point where I want... Like, don't lead about the remote. Don't tell me not to eat the pie. Tell me how to parent the kids. Tell me about how we're going to pay the bills. We get selective about the things we want to lead and what we want to be strong about. But then other areas we find it very easy to rationalize just being passive about that. But the goal for leadership, the pattern that exists from God, the pattern that exists in Scripture, is that of servant leadership. Now make no mistake, it's still leadership. We're still out there. We're providing vision, guiding, directing, taking initiative. We're not waiting around for someone else to do something, waiting around for someone else to make things happen. I mean, do you see Moses here? I mean, the position that God puts Moses is, again, you're the leader, Moses. The people are complaining. They're questioning God. They don't know the direction. You do. You're the one I've had a conversation with. You know where we're going. So now, Moses, go do this. Say this to the people, and then do this in terms of your activity. So he's taking an initiative here. And again, that is the pattern that exists for servant leadership. It is still leadership, but it is leadership whose goal is not to serve the leader, but to serve God and those we lead. Servant leaders recognize that leadership is more about giving direction and having influence than it is about control. It actually allows others to flourish, and again, only provides boundaries to protect ultimate goals and ultimate and godly priorities. That again, when I think about what God does and how He performs, I think that's what we need to do. That ultimately we give people that are under our authority as servant leaders room to grow, room to fail, room to make choices. Even bad choices, but again, we just protect ultimate priorities, ultimate ends in terms of our family or our parenting, whatever it might be. Servant leadership is marked by strength, conviction, kindness, sensitivity, accountability, and feedback. Let me say that again. It's marked by strength, conviction, kindness, sensitivity, accountability, and feedback. In fact, I think feedback may be the most important thing about servant leadership, or at least it's the thing that distinguishes most servant leadership from lording leadership and passive non-leadership. See, a lording leader doesn't want feedback because, again, he wants to be in control. He doesn't want you questioning his authority or commenting on it. And the passive non-leader doesn't want feedback because, well, wait a minute, I might have to do something. If I ask her what she thinks about what I'm doing, ask my children about what they think about what I'm doing, you know, I'm exposing myself to something that now I might need to do something that I really otherwise don't want to do. But see, the servant leader who understands that ultimately my leadership is to be benefiting the people under me, doesn't it make sense we ask for feedback? Doesn't it make sense we ask our wives, we ask our children, how am I doing? And then just be open to what they say. Now, when you get the feedback, now understand though, because you are the leader, you don't always have to accept that. In fact, a couple of weeks ago, I asked one of my children, how do you feel like I'm doing as a dad? You know, scale of 1 to 10, what would you give me as a rating? And she said, probably a 5.4. I said, well, I'm over 50%, which is pretty good. I also said to myself, well, you know something? All of my kids are kind of in that teenage, preteen phase, and so you got to give me at least like a point or two, because just as a teenager, they're just going to be thinking negatively about mommy. So I think at least that brings me to maybe a 7 at that point. And then I realized to myself, just in terms of me being a leader and how happy I would want my kids to be, I don't think I'd want to be at a 10. You know what I've said about, you know, you in church? Like, you should be happy like 80% of the time? Because if you're happy 100% of the time, what does that mean? That means you're not being challenged, not being convicted. You know, messages should rub you the wrong way. But there should be some personalities that make it difficult for you to be here. And so therefore, you should be happy only about 80% of the time. So then when you think about your wife or your kids, like, how happy are they? Well, you know, you should, if you can be at a 9 for that. So I'm figuring, like, 2 of those points are my responsibility. Like, I need to work hard with that child to bring them from the 7 to the 9, well, the 5.4, like a 7.4, I'm probably doing okay with that situation. But you get what I'm saying? That ultimately, even though I'm asking for feedback, I'm not necessarily catering, because if I'm catering, then I'm not leading. But let me say, make this point, that your wife should be happier than your kids. That when you ask your wife for feedback, she should be happier than the feedback your kids give you. Why is that? Because ultimately, she shares your authority with the children. So all those things your children are unhappy about with you, they should be unhappy about her too. So that's why together you should be happy in that extent, that you've agreed on a path, you've agreed on a parenting approach with your kids that ultimately the kids may be challenged by. You know, when you tell them to clean, you know, we've talked about that. I mean, you're always telling your kids things they don't want to hear. They rarely, really would want to sit on the couch and watch TV all day and not do their homework and not study for tests and all those different things. And so therefore, you're always going to be doing things that make them unhappy. But when it comes to your wife, she should be on board with a lot of, in other words, there should be a conversation that, see again, that's part of the servant leadership. That's part of you coming to your wife and saying, together, we need to come up with a plan in terms of how we approach the kids. Because when you think about it, from God's economy, you are the exact people that God intended to have your children. Have you ever thought about that? That there cannot be any mistakes when it comes to that. You know, that's something I'm starting to pray with my kids. That I thank God that we are a family. Because regardless of what you think of her, or he thinks of you, or she thinks of her, that you're intended to be together. That regardless of what you think of me, I'm intended to be your father. I am the best father that God could ever give you. I'm not saying I'm a great father, I'm just saying I'm the best that God would give to, that there's an intent in this. And that we see, but that's where you can come together. You can be, like, that's a starting point for you and your wife, parent to your children, that together we are the best people to be these children's parents. And so for that reason now, when you're talking, again, getting feedback, again, I think that's a primary see, we had these resolutions from the Courageous movie. We had some men come forward and sign that resolution. To be honest with you, you know, when I read that resolution, every time I read it, I think of the scripture that that has come from. They're all biblical principles that are there. So basically, when it comes to that resolution, that is a good standard for us to look at in terms of what we are trying to attain to in our fatherhood, our husbandiness, and our manhood. So therefore, for those of you who have signed the resolution, you know what you should do? You should go to your wife, you should even go to your children, and say, how am I doing? Which of these resolutions do you think I need the most work on? How about that? Now, for those of us who haven't signed the resolution, maybe what we do is we take that resolution, or we take scripture, because basically what it's from, whatever it is, and go to our wives or children and say, what is the biggest thing that you would think I would need to work on? And that, and again, I think when we think about what differentiates servant leadership from lordship leadership, from the passive non-leader, is submitting ourselves to that feedback. And then taking it in the context of godliness, in terms of God's direction to us as the ultimate leader. And I think what we're going to find, we even see this pattern with Moses very quickly, is that whenever we are not doing for our families what they believe we should be doing, we should be giving them a scriptural reason why it's not. Or maybe a financial reason why it's not. That we should be explaining something. Again, if you're thinking that I'm leading to serve the people under me, they should understand why I'm doing what I'm doing. And I particularly think that when children get older, that becomes more appropriate. When you're talking about kids that are 7 and under, you know, they have very little capacity to understand things. They shouldn't be welcomed into adult things. But when kids get older, we should welcome them into the adult world. This is why. Let's look at the checkbook. Let's look at money. This is what daddy makes and brings home. This is how I have to divide it and so on and so forth. So they don't have this thought that when they're 20, yeah, I'm going to get an apartment for $400 and I'm going to be able to live with $500 a month. Yeah, right. You know, there's an awareness that we need to create. But again, that's really the first principle we see here. In terms of now the principles of leadership, now that we understand the paradigm, the general goal or the foundation, the structure of our leadership, men, that now, what are the principles that we find here? And first of all, what Moses does here is he provides vision, he provides instruction, he encourages faith. Listen to what he says. Again, when we're talking about people that are complaining, people that are afraid, the Egyptian army is right up against them. They're pressing in. These are powerful men. These are people that will kill you as much as smile at you. And so here they are. Moses answered the people, "Do not be afraid, stand firm, and you will see the deliverance the Lord will bring you today. The Egyptians you see today, you will never see again. The Lord will fight for you. You need only to be still." And so think about what Moses is doing here. He's encouraging faith. He's encouraging them to believe. See, but in order for Moses to encourage them to believe, he has to believe. He has to be confident of God. Now, we have to understand from Moses that his faith here is supported by a lot that God has done before, right? And it was Moses has done 10 plagues. He's been the vehicle of God's miracle 10 times in Egypt. So it's kind of easy for him to think when God says, go raise your hands and something's going to happen, it's pretty easy to do because God has already showed him that. But now what God is asking Moses to do is you need to lead the people into that. But before you lead them in action, you have to lead them with words. See, again, you have to provide the vision. It's not just follow me and do this. It's this is why we can do this. Because ultimately, I just don't want your behavior. I just don't want your action to change. I want your heart to change. See, when we understand as husbands, as husbands, as men, as fathers, that ultimately we're trying to take the people that we lead and direct them to God, that makes our job pretty easy. Because what you see here in terms of the pattern that is established here, in terms of the principles of leadership, everything that Moses is doing in leadership ultimately reflects back to God. So he's saying, okay, we need to do this. You need to believe. You have to look at the Lord's deliverance. But what is Moses is just communicating about what God's going to do. So it's not ultimately put confidence in me, but put confidence in God. I'm trying to direct you to him who is the ultimate resource, who is the ultimate power. So as we seek to be the fathers that God has called us to be, seek to be the husbands that God calls us to be, ultimately it is God's power that we are relying on, and so that is what we are encouraging our families to do. And then after that, after Moses again gives the vision, gives the faith, gives the instruction, he's the teacher, giving them the right information, he then steps out. I love the confidence that God has in himself in verse 15. Then the Lord said to Moses, why are you crying out to me? Tell the Israelites to move on. See, God knows what he's doing, so he says, come on, get busy, Moses. Okay, the people are complaining, you're talking, you're instructing them, now it's time to move on. Tell the Israelites to move on, raise your staff, stretch out your hand over the sea to divide the waters. See, we already read that, so we won't read the rest because we're kind of running out of time. That ultimately, again, Moses is the one who's taking the action. He is the one that's taking the initiative. Again, we kind of glossed over this quickly, but I think that is a primary aspect of what leadership is. That when there is a problem, when there is a situation, a leader is the first one who's stepping into the water and saying, I'm going to do something about this. Again, directed by God, empowered by God, relying on God's provision, but ultimately, we're the ones that are there. I mean, Moses ultimately isn't going to someone else and saying, you know something, would you mind taking this direction? Would you mind going in the water and raising your arms? Because I'm not really feeling up to it. I'm really not all that confident in God. I'm not sure what he's going to do. So I'd really rather have you out there. Because then if God isn't faithful, then I can go, well, look, there must be a problem with him. There was something wrong with him that didn't happen. But no, Moses takes the initiative. So think about that. Think about when it comes to your children, when it comes to your wives, when it comes to friends, when it comes to you as a, who is taking more initiative in terms of your relationships? Like when there's a conflict, when there's a problem, when there's a situation, who is the one that's first thinking, we need to do something about this? See, and understand, as a man, you don't need to know what to do necessarily, but what you need to do is take the initiative to say, we've got to address it. That I notice it's a problem. And even better, if you can say, it's not a problem right now, I see a problem 6 months from now. I see a problem, maybe a behavior pattern or an attitude in my children that are developing up, and so what do we need to do now to avoid that. But again, I'm the one taking the initiative. Who's the one that's taking initiative when it comes to spiritual things? Who's the first one that says, we need to pray about this? Who's the first one that says, you know, maybe we need to gather the family together for devotions? Who's the first one out of bed on a Sunday morning leading the family to church? See, it is true in America, women are more often associated with spiritual things than men. Because spiritual is it's not concrete, and we like concrete. You know, spiritual is about meditating on God, and or so we say, and it's all this, you know, mind stuff, and we like to do. We like to break things and build things up. That's kind of, and conquer things and kill things and rip them apart and eat them. I mean, that's the man thing, right? But we have a misconception that spirituality is somehow weak, that it's somehow for women. You know, I think there is an aspect of faith that women just assimilate easier than we do men. But we can't now subvert our responsibility to say the wife is the one that's taking initiative in spiritual things. Now, ladies, you have to understand that you have an important role in all of this. That you have a choice whether to be supporting your man in his leadership, or whether you're going to be the one that's working against him in terms of what he's doing. But see, what we have to realize, men, is that regardless of what our kids or our wife are doing, there's some way that we should lead. See, God is not thrown off by people disobeying him. God still has ultimate plans and ultimate goals, and this is moving forward whether you're coming or not. And there's an aspect of what we do as men, that, you know something, this is the way we're going, and, you know, and it's not about we're buying a boat and we're gonna live in the Bahamas. No, it's about we're gonna be godly people. We're gonna follow God's direction. We're gonna pray. We're gonna serve. You know, I'm not talking about our agendas again. I'm talking about godly agendas. I'm thinking about what does the wife and the kids want? And we're gonna put that into our direction in terms of what we're doing. But again, we have the parameters. We're setting that in terms of what we do as leaders. And then when it comes to taking initiative, we're the ones taking the initiative. That's what Moses is doing here. Okay, I've instructed, I've told you why I'm doing what I'm doing, and why you should follow me, who our confidence is in, and then he moves ahead and does the action that God calls him to. And the neat part about the rest of this account here is now God does all the work. That Moses is out there, and Moses is the one that's humanly exposed, but really God just sets Moses up and makes him look good. Let me read through the end of the chapter. It says, "Then the angel of God, who had been traveling in front of Israel's army, withdrew and went behind them. The pillar of cloud also moved from in front and stood behind them, coming between the armies of Egypt and Israel. Throughout the night, the cloud brought darkness to the one side and light to the other side, so that neither went near the other all night. Then Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and all that night the Lord drove back the sea with a strong east wind and turned it into dry land. The waters were divided, and the Israelites went through the sea on dry ground with a wall of water on the right hand and on the left hand." I lied. I'm not going to read to the end. Because, you know, son, this is wow. Like, don't miss the wow here. Don't miss the principle that when we talk about our leadership, men, and where we're directing the family and we're relying on God, we have a close connection with God so that we can be the leaders that God calls us to be, that ultimately we can know that God is going to be exactly where he needs to be. I mean, don't miss the fact that this cloud, this fire, is in front of the people when they need direction. But the cloud and the fire is behind them when they need protection. And that's a beautiful picture of us, beautiful picture of what the man's role is in terms of guiding and directing, but then on the other hand, protecting. So on one hand, I'm in front of my family leading, but on the other hand, I'm behind. And I'm looking, and I'm saying, I'm looking for the danger. I'm noticing things that are off. So again, I can be the one that steps in and protects it. But again, that's what God is doing. And that's what we can depend on God to do when we're relying on Him. And it says, and the Egyptian pursued them, and all the Pharaoh's horses in verse 23, and chariots and horsemen, followed them into the sea. During the last watch of the night, the Lord looked down from the pillar of fire and cloud of the Egyptian army and threw it into confusion. These poor Egyptians. He made the wheels of the chariots come off so they had difficulty driving. And the Egyptians said, let's get away from the Israelites. The Lord is fighting for them against Egypt. Like, just instantaneous that this is a bad idea. Like, what were we thinking? This God that did the 10 plagues thing, why do we think we could, like, defeat Him just because we had power and strength? Then the Lord said to Moses, stretch out your hand over the sea so the waters may flow back over the Egyptian, the chariots and horsemen. Moses stretched out his hands over the sea, and at daybreak the sea went back into place. The Egyptians were fleeing towards it, and the Lord swept them into the sea. The water flowed back and covered the chariots and horsemen, the entire army of Pharaoh that had followed the Israelites into the sea. Not one of them survived. That's why I think the water needs to be deep. So a certain portion of the Red Sea needs to be where they cross. But the Israelites went through the sea on dry ground, with a wall of water on their right and on their left. The day the Lord saved Israel from the hands of the Egyptians, and Israel saw the Egyptians lying dead on the shore, and when the Israelites saw the great power of the Lord displayed against the Egyptians, don't miss this here, the people feared the Lord and put their trust in Him and in Moses, His servant. See, the benefit we have, men, in being a husband, in being a father, in directing our families, that ultimately when we show them that I'm directed by God, that is His power, it's His provision. See, that I am a leader to you because I am humble before Him. That God then sets us up. God then shows us. I mean, when there's a crisis in your family, maybe because someone has passed away, or there's a broken bone, or there's an illness, there's a financial crisis, whatever it might be. See, when we are the ones that stand in that gap and saying, you know something, we are going to be okay because I believe God. Because God has shown me something, or God has promised me things. I'm speaking the word. I'm taking an initiative. I'm entering their minds with the truth of God and saying, this is what you can know, and this is where we're going. That's what our families are looking for. That's the role that ultimately God has given us. And you know, man is, and just see how God undergirds as He works and he displays His power for the people of Israel. They're not only directed to God, they're directed to Moses. And that's what's going to happen. When you communicate to your family that I'm only directing you to what God has done, now when God does it, you're able to say that they're going to now believe God more. But then God is going to promote you in their hearts to say, isn't He something special too? And that's what God is doing. See, it's tempting, men, when we think of our leadership, to blame those under us. I'm not the leader that I should be because she's like this, because my kids are like this, because the circumstances are like this. And you know something? I think we need to stop that. Ultimately, we have to stop the thought that we can't do something. We can't overcome something. We can't stop something. That we don't have what it takes to be the man, the father, the husband that God has called us to be. Because you know something? When there are gaps in our leadership, usually it's not about the people we're leading. It's about us. It's about us, and it's about our relationship with God. See, because ultimately to say that I can't be the leader that God has called me to be is to say that God is lacking something. And we know that's impossible. We know that God has given us His provisions. He's given us His strength. So again, the main question is, are we connected to Him? Are we engaging in the vital aspects of the disciplines of the Christian life so we make sure we're in tune with God, so when we think about our fatherhood, our husbandness, that we're being that, because God is doing that work through us. Again, what God calls us to, He is going to lead us through. You know, as we're not going to get into chapter 15, but chapter 15 is just a
It's a song of worship to God. And what Moses does is after the people have seen God's victory, and maybe you're saying, good job, Moses, you really led us well. Moses says, you know something, the person we should be praising right now is God. And so maybe the thought I'll leave you with, men, is to what extent is our family aware that we're worshiping God? And how much is worship a discipline in our life? And how much are we leading and directing our families in that as well? But let's bow and let's pray. Father, I thank you that you have set us up for success. You have set us up to have abundant life. Because that's what Jesus said he came for. I came that they might have life and have it more abundantly. And I think part of that for men, for fathers, for husbands, is that we ultimately be the fathers and husbands that you desire for us to be. And so, Father, I pray that we would look at the gaps in our lives, the gaps in our character, the gaps in our behavior, the things that are unpleasing to you, and that we say, God, with your strength and your power, I will overcome. And that we then look to our wives and we look to our children and seek their feedback in terms of just what we're doing to benefit them. And then ultimately in it, we find your provision, we find your resource, because we're pressing your throne, we're in your word, we're guided by your spirit. Father, I just know that as men, we're in different places here. Some are far away from the man, the husband, the father that you want them to be, and some are fairly close, but none of us are there. And so, Father, help us to engage with you, to ultimately find the resources you have for us, to ultimately lead our families. We just thank you that we can be confident in this because you're a faithful God and you've promised to help us to do the things that you've called us to. It's in your Son, Jesus Christ's name, that we do pray. Amen.